The Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high-potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential.
Hi, everybody. Welcome along to this latest episode of the podcast. And today, actually, what I'd like to do is just have a chat with Bhairav about what he's been doing with one of the businesses he's working on in the world of blockchain. Bhairav, can you tell the guys what is you're doing in that space?
Yes, so the business itself is called DeFactor. And what we do is we provide, well, we help traditional businesses get access to funding through blockchain technology. So at the moment, there is a number of different, what we call liquidity pools. So pools of cash sitting on the blockchain. So if you just imagine lots and lots of people bought crypto years ago, right? Yeah. And they, I think the total value locked is something around 300 billion or something like that. It's the size of a small bank in these DeFi liquidity pools. And essentially people need to do something with that cash because they can't always withdraw it. I mean, they can do, but they may have tax issues, but they want to do something with that crypto that they have. And so what a lot of people have been doing over the last 4 or 5 years is putting it into these yield farms, or they've been essentially trying to hedge crypto. So essentially where they buy one crypto asset for another crypto asset, and then they just assume that that one's going to go up, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. It gets complicated quite quickly. But what we're trying to do is bring real world assets. So at the moment we're doing invoice financing on the blockchain. We're looking up to do inventory finance. We're looking to do further down the road, real estate, but that's obviously a little bit trickier because you have much regulatory issues to deal with there. But generally what we're doing is we're building a platform that can help any business come to us without having to have any blockchain technology or blockchain knowledge or crypto knowledge or anything like that, and then access these pools of funds that exist out there. And we're trying to make it essentially so that a business just doesn't have to worry about any of the underlying technology or whatever any of it means. Think of it as a complement to traditional banking and alternative finance. We're creating a new way for businesses to access liquidity, basically.
So it's all gone swimmingly. There's been no issues at all, and the world's a happy place.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually going very well in that we launched in December.
That wasn't the answer I was expecting. No, because whenever I ask that of anybody, they usually say, not entirely. There's always bumps and lumps on the road.
Actually, we've been quite good. And I think the thing is that we all have a lot of experience in the field, especially around invoice financing, invoice discounting. And the one good thing that we've done is we brought a lot of gray-haired old people like myself and yourself into the business with a bit of experience, who know the lay of the land, know how to grow businesses, scale businesses. And so, you know, we started off very, very quickly in December through to, let's say, March, first Q1 of this year. There was a lot of stuff happening. And we managed to launch what we call something called a spring pad, which is where companies who don't really know much about crypto can come to us and receive just small amounts of funding. So this is sub $50,000 type tickets, but it gets them some funding, but it also gets them an experience of how that whole blockchain piece works or how DeFactor works. And that's gone well. The first cohort's gone through. We are open for applications now. Well, actually, it's continuous. So we were doing these things where we would have cohorts of companies that we would then work with, but we realized there's just so many companies need the help. We've just opened it up now. And that's going well. We're building partnerships in the blockchain. We're doing a lot of events. So I guess a lot of the time over the next few weeks, I'll be spending a lot of time at various events. And I know the other guys have been doing things like Paris Blockchain Week. We've done, Amsterdam had like a big Dev Connect conference. So we've been present in a lot of places. And like I said, we've partnered with some very, senior blockchain, reputable blockchain businesses. So things are moving forward very well. And I think there's a roadmap that's laid out on our website, and we're pretty much on track for that. For the end of the year, I expect that we should have quite a lot of new exciting features coming through to help businesses get their liquidity. So I think that from an entrepreneurial perspective, what's been interesting is there's 4 or 5 different entities that are all pulled together to do this project. So there's been a number of companies that, you know, there's 4 of us who got together to start it all off. And what's been interesting there is to essentially learn how everyone works, right? And build an organization that can function in a single direction. So we all have a view on the same, you know, all the same view on the strategy. We're operationally moving to work towards fulfilling that strategy. And so that's, I wouldn't say it's been a rocky road, but it's been interesting because we've never all worked together in this way. So it's just,
I was going to say, how did you bring that alignment as to what you're doing? How did you practically get over the fact that no matter who they are, you put 4 people in a room, they're not all going to have the same view of the vision at the beginning anyway?
No. I think we all had the same view of what we all want to achieve as de facto. So helping businesses achieve, you know, getting finance. And we wanted to be, there were certain key features like blockchain agnostic. We wanted to be asset class agnostic. We want to be able to service the underserviced, underbanked type things. So those are the key
platform kind of stuff in there.
Sorry?
Real platform stuff.
Yeah.
You know, genuinely, this is a playing field that lots of people can come in and join in.
Yes, exactly. And so the idea is because it's, you know, part of this new wave of Web3 and this new evolution that people keep hyping, what we wanted to ensure is that it's not something, obviously for the next few years, it's something that we're building and working on ourselves, but as over the whole aim for the next 3 years is to essentially disinvolve ourselves or uninvolve ourselves or extract ourselves. So within, let's say, the fourth year, it may take longer than that, but by, you know, three, four years in, others outside of the original people who founded it should be able to come in, add to the code base, add new business models on top of what we're building. The idea being is, you know, the whole thing was set up as a non-profit Swiss association that is, you know, opening up the code base. We'll open that up in a few years' time. Well, we've already opened up some of it, but we'll keep steadily opening up more of it over time. And then we'll have people basically building on top of that, right? And the idea is that, you know, we can obviously think about certain things, but there's other people who've got other passions that want to also help businesses get finance, and they can build on top of what we're building.
Right. That opens up an interesting point, which is, what you're doing here is you are generally organically growing a community around a central hub, the platform, and then bringing people in who will work as a community with all the issues that you get around that. What's your thinking about how you'll actually go about doing that?
So this is the interesting one, and this is one of the things that I thought we would talk about today is around community building, because, you know, one of the key aspects of any blockchain project is the community, right? Those are the people that will show an interest in it, be your evangelists, obviously buy the token, go out there and really promote what we're doing. And that's, you know, at the moment, what we've been obviously doing, we go out and talk to lots of different people, right? So during our initial, token raise, what we were doing is there's a lot of established communities that sit out there already. And we were doing a lot of what they say AMAs. So ask me anythings, where we go into a Telegram chat and then talk about the project and they can ask us any questions they want. So we were doing a lot of that to basically build our community. So we were essentially going around talking to different groups of people to say, here's what we're doing. If you find this interesting, come and join our journey. And, you know, we managed to build up a good community around that. We obviously then need to keep them engaged. And so part of what the marketing team, and we brought in some heavyweight marketing talent to help us then take that community and nurture it and grow it, and try and make it much more interactive.
Are they growing that community? How do you grow a community?
Yeah, this is it. So, I mean, I think there are various tactics, right? The first tactic we had was basically by going out there and introducing ourselves to other communities and spending some time talking to them, in a sense there. And then there are obviously a number of people out there that focus, their sole objective is to talk about new projects that come in. So they're always interested in talking to new projects that are solving, you know, various issues. And I did a number of podcasts, you know, YouTube interviews, all of these kinds of things that we did in order for us to basically get the word out through people who've got larger, you know, viewers, subscriberships. Then we also, at that early stage, so at the very beginning, we built some good partnership networks, right? So some of the businesses that we partner with, or the organizations or crypto projects that we partner with, have got their own substantial communities, but they are also, you know, working with us either on a technical basis or they're working with us on a commercial basis. And so again, they're good people within those organizations who can also evangelize for us. And then it's really, again, just about some of the work that we're doing. Some of it's very fairly traditional, right? We're going out to events. We've got speaking opportunities. We'll be on various panels. You know, you're going to not just, you know, not just speaking at the events, but we've, you know, had booths in different places. And so it's really some of that same traditional get your feet out there and move and get your bums on various seats and get your face in front of big crowds and audiences.
And is there a core idea or a single statement that unites all of these networks to grow your community? Like, is there something that you're offering that these people are particularly buying into?
The idea, so what we say that we're doing, and which we are doing, is democratizing access to finance, right? But it's democratizing it for businesses as well as individuals. So one of the key things I think that excites me about what we're doing is that you're, as a person, if you've got any kind of money that you're saving, you know, you've heard of what's going on with Reddit and the Wall Street Bets, GameStop type stuff, right? Those activities, there's all the Robin Hood investors. You've got a whole new set of people who don't necessarily have huge amounts of money to spend, but are looking for interesting things to invest their money in, right? And want to have some returns. And what we're doing as part of DeFactor is we're opening up access to funding for different types of companies that normally, you know, you wouldn't see as an investor. So for example, one of the things we're doing is a whiskey distillery, and they obviously whiskey takes 3 years before it can come back at whiskey.
Yeah.
But there's a value locked into that, into the barrels. So if we can fund the inventory, the distillery is also then able to, you know, unlock that capital and do additional things with it, right? Maybe start a gin distillery so that it can start earning some cash.
Yeah.
While the whiskey's moving forward. And I think what we're doing there, which is really, really interesting, is that, you know, we're doing what banks don't do, right? We're engaging with the business, getting them to talk about their story, they're essentially saying, why do we need this money? What are we using it for? And they're speaking directly to our community, right? They're not talking to like myself or other guys working on the project. They're actually talking to the community to say the benefit of DeFactor is X, Y, and Z. This is what we can do with our business, how we can grow. And so in both sides, there's a benefit, right? So any good marketplace community, there has to be benefits for everybody involved, right? Yeah. So the benefits for the whiskey distillery, let's say, for example, just to take an example, is that not only do they get the funding, but they get access to potential consumers, right? And the people on the other side, the community, not only has the potential to invest or put some money towards this funding, they also have the ability to see a new product, but also maybe get some freebies or whatever it is that the distillery wants to offer. And that's just an example.
I imagine this must resonate really strongly in this world where, well, not this world, the world that has been for a very long time of financially the haves and the have-nots. So the haves that have access to, who have the money, and the have-nots who need it to go and generate and build whatever it is they want to do. And you and I have both been through the journey of let's try and raise money and finding it really, really hard to get those that have it to part with it. Because there's an element of a club, and if you're not in it, you're not in it.
I guarantee you that Elon Musk didn't have to submit, you know, 3 months of bank statements and a business plan for his takeover of Twitter. You know, if you've got 42 billion, if you've got a few billion in the, or 250 billion in the bank, well, not even in the bank, but just.
No, on paper.
On paper, then you're obviously going to get some financing, right? And I think that's it. What we're trying to do is trying to open it up. And we always said that we're not a replacement for banking, right? We're not a replacement for bank finance. It's just an alternative way of achieving finance.
On the Elon Musk thing, I'm just getting the numbers wrong, so forgive me, but I love the little report I read during the week that simultaneously in my Twitter for $44 billion, he also managed to wipe $40 billion out in value because people went, now he's taking the eye off Tesla, let's downplay Tesla.
Yeah.
That must be something else. once you're waking up or once you're in the evening, you go, hello, darling, I've spent $44 billion today and lost another $40 billion.
It's amazing, isn't it? I think the Tesla, they wiped 22% off the shares. The shares are down 22% in the last year or something like that. But, you know, it's still a massive company. And
what's $40 billion when you've got 280 of them?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a distraction from what you're saying. So, you know, I've heard this statement before in a number of markets, democratizing markets, but actually in the world of finance, that sounds like quite a novel approach.
It is, because, you know, I've worked in alternative finance for like 10, 12 years now, right? And it's the province of the asset managers, hedge funds and the banks to look at businesses and decide on what they want to fund or not. And, you know, they'll make the decisions based on whatever risk appetites compliance say. But there's a lot of good businesses that just need cash to grow, but can't convince these organizations that they need financing. But they could convince a larger community, or they could convince, you know, other types of investors and family offices or whatever it is, but they just don't get the exposure.
So how important in the whole business of, look, we have a platform, our business is about helping those with money use that money to make more money and helping people who need money to access the money that they can then grow and return some back to the investors and keep some for themselves. That's not exactly a groundbreaking idea. But then overlay that with democratizing. Was this an opportunity that there's huge growth and wealth through crypto threw up in a moment, in the moment that you guys grabbed hold of? Or is this something that's been a longer standing ambition?
So it's interesting because a lot of this came from the Atom network, right? So one of our clients, a company called Console Freight, they are freight forwarders. And so they deal with all the company logistics, essentially business companies that ship goods around the world. And they wanted to start their own financing for freight forwarders. And they'd gone to the traditional banks, but the traditional banks and lenders wouldn't touch their business model. They just said, no, we're not doing it.
Why?
I'm assuming there's a couple of things. One is the risk profile. You're taking goods from China and sending them to, you know, the US. There's a lot of disputes that happen in that kind of world, right? There's that bit, I would assume. I don't know the exact reasons, but I would assume it's something to do with risk, and I would assume it's something to do with volumes and stuff like that, right? Because they weren't asking for lots and lots of money. They were asking for just millions rather than tens of millions, right? Which is another reason that people don't tend to touch things. And so they... Actually, we were at a conference and just talking about what they wanted to do. And there was a guy from the Maker Foundation, so MakerDAO, that was there. And that's a big organization that creates a stable coin in the crypto world. And they liked what these guys were proposing. And actually, through another partnership with another project called Centrifuge, they managed to get some funding. So what happened through that was those guys realized how difficult it was to scale, because there's so much technology needed, and there were a few manual processes in there that could be automated. And they realized that the problems that they were having would be the same problems for any other company trying to access this money that exists. So the cash is already sitting there in these pools that other people have built, but getting access to that is very manual at the very beginning, right? And this is we're still very early in the early years of all of this. And so that's when, you know, we were working with them, looking at what was going on in there from a tech point of view. And then I and another couple of guys proposed, well, we can do this in a much more scalable manner, and we can try and connect into other pools. So they were connected into one pool. We could also branch this out and have others.
This is classically like create a marketplace, you know. I know Amazon sells a lot of its own stuff, but the vast majority of what it does is simply make it really, really easy for me to find that little washer without having to go out and try and find somebody that's got it. So this opening up access to, I'm doing this with another client I'm working with now who's looking to raise investment for his business, and we managed to get to a point which is, there's a relatively small group of people who know more about your business than you do, because it's a particular area of technology. And what you're doing is acknowledged by those that do know about it has been really good. All we've got to do is get in front of that right small group of people. But we don't know literally who they are. Ergo, a marketplace would be perfect to then connect both sides of the market.
Exactly. And so what we're building, the first iteration of what we're building is that, is essentially that pipeline, that framework. Just as you say, from an Amazon point of view, right? Amazon started off having everything in their own warehouses, right? Then they did drop shipping for others, and then they started hosting other people's goods and all this kind of stuff, right? So I'd say, you know, we're at the very, you know, I keep telling the guys on the project, you know, this is only April, right? We did our token sale in November. So you're talking about 4 months have gone past, and the vast amount that we've done in 4 months, kind of, you feel that you should be doing more, but actually 4 months, right? So for me, this is the first iteration, is us connecting into the current partners that we've got, and we're working on new partnerships as well. So there's a couple of new ones that one that we announced recently with a protocol called Amplify. And this is what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to build these bridges into these other pools so that people can then.
What came first in the fact was that there's money to be made here, or there's a purpose, there's a democratizing job that needs done.
Well, the funny thing is that, you know,
and don't tell me they both came at the same time.
No, I mean, obviously, you know, you want to make money, but you're never quite sure in this world, right? Because everything is so new and everything is still trying to find its feet. So there's no way that we walked into this thinking that you could become gajillionaires, because you could equally, you know, the way the market works. And if you look at the prices of a lot of these tokens now, they've gone down so far that, you know, people have lost, you know, if you're thinking that you're going to make quick money, you're not, because that market has just gone down massively in the last 6 months or so. So for us, it was always a long-term project. We were always looking at it as like, okay, yes, the aim is that we will make some money out of this at some point. But if we can raise enough money that allows us the time to build the right infrastructure and right, you know, governance around the project, then we'll be in a great position to exploit what's happening in the future. So for me, it's always been like a future play, right?
Right. I actually, this question about profit and purpose, because I saw a great article during the week where a 50-something greyback advertising man was railing against the younger advertising generation, as he described them as the purpose-led woke. And his issue was that, sure, purpose is great. It makes us all feel warm and cuddly. It's a great thing to do. Brands have to have purpose. Purpose is going to be bigger than just selling what they sell. But you said this is all now going on in a world where most consumers are more worried about how they're going to pay their energy bill, how they're going to put some fuel in their car, how they're going to survive in a level of inflation that only people our age, 50-something for me, with inflation at levels that only we have any living memory of. They have no memory at all. And he really was saying, look, get a grip, let us live in the real world here. Purpose is an added benefit. But underneath it all, you have to have a commercially sustainable business. So that's why I asked that question about, was this there's money to be made and we can make a change, or we can make a change and make some money doing it?
I think it was definitely the former. I think what we saw was, I mean, I think for each of us who are involved in this project, so, I mean, I've been involved in this blockchain space for a number of, from the previous business, right? We were looking at this back in 2016, 17. I kind of personally stopped for a while because you had a lot of scams going on during this 2017, 18. And I just kind of got disinterested basically when everything was looked like. Everyone's very dodgy, but over the last, let's say,
but
3 years.
But not purposeful.
No,
And that scam artist, you know, that is not about brands, you know, like, I'm always reminded now of Ben and Jerry's. Unilever owned Ben and Jerry's. Ben and Jerry's is an independent board, and the guys in the head office at Unilever must scratch their head going, oh my lord, what are they saying next?
Yeah.
We own them, but we have no control over what comes out their mouth. And I'm not saying they are statements are not admirable, but there's a brand that is a lot more about purpose and belief than is about hard making money. Oh, when I say making money, I'm not talking about exploitation here. I'm talking about remembering that if we have costs that are greater than our revenues, we don't have a business.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for us, it wasn't about burning cash, raising money, and then just trying to burn through the cash as quickly as possible. Typical, you know, Silicon Valley VC thing, and then we've got to raise another 10 times what you raised before. For us, it was, okay, we know that, you know, we all believe that decentralized finance is here to stay in some form or another, right?
Yeah,
we all know
absolutely.
Blockchain technology is not going to go away. Yes, there's many questions that people have about its utility, but there are use cases for it that make sense, right? And I can very much see in the finance field that a lot of what we're doing makes the movement of funds to businesses more efficient, right? And that's ultimately what you want, is what you need, right? You want to remove as much red tape as possible for these businesses, right? But still keep the investors or the funders fairly safe, right? Or at least give them the ability to understand their risk, which is the key thing.
Yeah.
As I said, it's very, very early stages. I would say that, you know, we're like really in the first cycle of this. And so the whole point of us building this was to say, let's get in early. Let's get the connections in. Let's start talking to all of the other players in the market. And, you know, it's the whole thing about the blockchain community at the moment, take it as a whole. It's very open and very welcoming, right? People will always try and help other communities. There's very rare that you come across, you know, a project that you start approach and they'll push you back. And if they do, then they're probably not worth getting involved with, right? So you see that there's people all working together to try and make this more meaningful. Let's put it that way. And I think because we've seen it's here to stay, for us, it's okay, let's build, let's see how it goes. There's so much opportunity out there for us to be able to then be the de facto place where people come to get financing. And again, we're very realistic. There's such a huge market, right? The funding gap globally is $14 trillion, right? Wow. So there's no one company that's going to go and, or one organization or one project that's going to go and get that $14 trillion. There's plenty of room for lots of different people. Amazon hasn't killed the Etsy's of the world, hasn't killed the PC world, Curry's of all the, they haven't died. They've just adapted, right?
Yeah.
And so this is the reality of the situation. It's not one person does it and that's it. No one else can ever do it. There's not one electric car manufacturer, right? There's all of these things. There's room for the market is big enough for there to be room for people like us. And I don't think I'm very much against this whole, you've got to do that quickly. You've got to do it quickly. Someone else will steal your idea. We've talked about this. They can steal whatever they want. They can't execute. Then they're nowhere, right? We're executing.
Yeah. I think that's something I've been saying a lot recently, which is remember your aim in business is not to win the market, just to win a share of the market.
Mm.
Because virtually every market is big enough to have a lot of very successful businesses in it. So within that, when you're here, understand which part of that market is it that we're really well aligned to. And your purpose-led proposition of democratizing access to finance, I can see where that comes from. So what's coming next for de facto?
So what the plan is over the next year or so is to double down on what we've been doing up to now, right? So up to now, we've been concentrating on invoice financing. We have the first partner, Console Freight, that was onboarded in December. And we're looking to build on board other larger invoice financing partners that are there. So there's other companies out there that provide financing to other businesses that need additional liquidity that we can provide through we can transport to them through the pools and through de facto. And so what we're looking to do now is to essentially add in additional invoicing financing partners, double down on that, and essentially make sure that we've got the right, you know, we're streamlining the processes and making that more efficient. There's a whole bunch of stuff around that when it comes to the risk management, collateral management that we're adding in as well. But in parallel, we're also working with other businesses. So as I mentioned, the inventory finance company, you know, by doing some of these smaller deals, we're able to understand where some of the stumbling blocks are for funding in the traditional world. And we're actually able then to say, okay, how can we solve those in the DeFi space? So the inventory finance piece is then it's coming along. We're also look at other types of assets. There's digital asset financing, and there's also real world assets. So essentially what I mean to say by that is the real estate piece. And so there's a number of things that we're working on in parallel, but the key is to kind of increase the core funding that we're doing now, show that, you know, to everybody that, look, we've got a stable platform, stable model, you know, the token economics are there and it's growing. And then we want to add in additional asset classes and build the additional expertise, because each of these different areas requires slightly different expertise. And we just need to then get those people that we need on board into the project and at the same time build the ecosystem, et cetera, et cetera. So really the tactic is fairly standard, right? Do what we're doing now, make sure we're doing it well, then start adding other bits and pieces on top.
So the very early stages of a very big idea that originated out of a gap in the market. And interesting for me, in that world where purpose seems to be more important than anything, but where actually there was almost a social benefit, the democratization of access to money, a social benefit. But underpinning that, a bunch of greybacks who understood that at the end of the day, this is a commercial entity. And while we may not aspire to be worth $280 billion, actually we do need to, the evidence that this is successful will be, it will make money.
Yeah, 100%. That's it in a nutshell. We're not, you know, one of these projects that is trying to promise the world and then delivers nothing, right? Yeah. We're actually delivering quite a lot.
Thanks so much for sharing that. You know, you and I talk regularly, and we don't actually talk about what we are personally doing in any great depth, to be honest. So I found that really useful. I hope the other people listening have found it useful as well. And I certainly hope that, you know, on maybe a recurring basis, we'll drop back in and do podcasts on how this is working in the real world. Because this is what this is all about, the reality of being an entrepreneur, growing a business, whether it's a very big one or a much more modest one, in the real world scenario. So thanks for that, Bharav, and hope you enjoyed that, and we will see you next time on the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. Bye for now.
Cheers, everybody.
Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.